Ah, it's Jade Kolff at the Kolff Man coming at you with the heat on today's program, No Holds Barred. And today, coming up on the show, we're talking hoops, plenty of stuff going on there. We are going on to boxing, huge boxing yesterday in Brisbane, controversial stuff, and we are talking Wimbledon Tennis Championships. Coming up next, No Holds Barred. You know what? I'm really pumped for today's show. I really am. We have got an absolute ripper. I'm going to start today's program talking hoops. Yes, as we know, NBA action, NBA free agency going on. So we're going to start the top of the program with that. There's been some goings on and some dealings overnight. The big one there. Well, I mean, there's quite a few things that have gone on, but the first one there that we're going to start with, Paul Millsap has signed with the Denver Nuggets for $90 million over 3 years. So a nice cool $30 million in the back pocket per year for Millsap. Pretty good coin in anybody's language. The new collective bargaining agreement is just skyrocketed salaries in the NBA. And Millsap is a nice guy. A nice player, a bit of versatility in the small forward position, does a little bit of everything, going to give you 15 to 16 points a game, you know, 8 rebounds, a few assists. He's a nice addition there for the Nuggets, but really Millsap deciding to sign with the Nuggets shows exactly where his priorities are, and that is not winning an NBA championship, because the Denver Nuggets are nowhere near it. So Millsap heading off to Colorado to pick up some nice change there. There was some interest with Millsap. There were some clubs such as, the Houston Rockets had shown a little bit of interest there. That would have been, I would have thought that was a good fit for Millsap. They're going to win a lot of games next year, the Rockets, upwards of 60 games. And we all know that they are up and about and looking to impact and challenge the Golden State Warriors out west. So Millsap moves on to Denver for $90 million. The big one, which we know about, Gordon Hayward. He's been wined and dined by the Boston Celtics over the last 24 hours. And, looking to reunite with his old college coach at Butler, Brad Stevens. I think this is the place where Hayward ends up, without a doubt. This is, to me, this is an absolute no-brainer. Go and play some basketball in Beantown, Boston. Raving fans, one of the great franchises in all of sports. I think this is a good move for Hayward. So he's been wine and dined down there in Boston, which is a good thing. They need to pull out all stops. They need to do something. Danny Ainge needs to do something. He needs to land one of these guys, because he's got about 25 draft picks in the back pocket. But unfortunately, draft picks don't equal on-court talent in the form of a formidable NBA team that's going to realistically challenge for the title. Now, we know the Celtics this year made the Eastern Conference Finals, but they were nowhere near it when they were matched up against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So they need to land Hayward. Obviously, they missed out on Paul George. He's in OKC, much to my enjoyment. So Hayward, stay tuned with this one here. I expect him to be with the Celtics after this weekend. The other one, which is a good one, and I took a look at this and it kind of made me laugh. Kyle Lowry has signed a 3-year deal to stay with the Toronto Raptors at $100 million. So some really, really nice solid change there for Lowry. But what I did find funny was he actually talked about wanting to win a ring. I don't know, the Toronto Raptors and winning a ring, they don't really go hand in hand. They were nowhere near it again this year. They seem to be You know, there are a couple of really marquee players away from doing that. Toronto has never been a destination for free agents, so I really don't know what Kyle's on about there. He could have gone somewhere else, a different situation that would be a better choice in terms of winning a championship. So, again, I think Lowry, believe the Raptors could pay Lowry more money than anywhere else. So he settled there in Toronto for 3 years with on $100 million. So, you know, hey, well done to Kyle Lowry. He's a great player. But, you know, in the Eastern Conference, they've got to get through Cleveland. They've got to get through Boston. And without any major additions in this free agent market, which I don't see them getting, I don't see them improving at all at this stage. But Kyle Lowry staying put in Toronto, good for him, good for Toronto basketball fans. Take a look at this right here. We've got the Minnesota Timberwolves continue to make moves, and this is a nice piece here. I'm looking at here, Taj Gibson has been picked up by the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's signed as a free agent, which gives them a legitimate fourth piece to their puzzle. He goes across there and joins star player Jimmy Butler. We all know Jimmy, he came across from the Chicago Bulls in that that draft night trade. The Chicago Bulls, I mean, these guys are in absolute free fall. Really don't know what they're doing, no direction whatsoever. They're going to have to be in total rebuild at this stage. So the Bulls not going well at all. But Gibson comes across to the T-Wolves to join the massive unit out of Kentucky, Karl Anthony Towns, the big seven-footer who's good for 25 and 10 boards plus over the next decade. And Andrew Wiggins, the wing player. So they've got Towns, Wiggins, Butler, and now Taj Gibson. Now, Jimmy Butler coming across, he's going to be the main guy there, I believe, on the perimeter. Wiggins is a nice piece, but I don't think he's got that alpha dog in him, that killer instinct. So he doesn't have to do that now, because Butler's going to be that guy. Wiggins can just chip in wherever need be. And Towns, obviously, down low, one of the most dominant big men in the league. He can do it all. And Gibson comes across, about 6'10", long arms, plays great defense, can hit the outside shot. He's been the sixth man of the year before, I believe, in the NBA. So a great move, this, from Minnesota. This gives them four pieces that can legitimately catapult the Timberwolves into contention in the Western Conference. And I don't say that lightly. They're good now to win 50, 55 games just with these pieces alone. So if they can shore up that bench, you know, 55 to 60 wins may be a possibility for this team. You know, they're about to explode. So huge move there from Minnesota. They're doing great things. It's good to see. They're out there making some things happen. They're not just sitting back and watching the Golden State Warriors and, you know, their dominance. They're like, you know what, the time is now. We've got some pieces. They've brought in Butler and Gibson, two veteran guys that played together in Chicago at the Chicago Bulls. And these guys add class. They add toughness. They add experience. And exciting times if you're a T-Wolves fan. On that note, we're going to talk New York Knicks, talking about free fall. What a diabolical franchise this is. These guys have been in the doldrums for almost 20 years now. Such a long time. And Carmelo Anthony, let's talk about him. He's got a no-trade clause in his contract, and this is how well the Knicks are going. Carmelo Anthony has gone to management and said, you know what, I've got a no-trade clause, but let's waive that clause because I want out. I've had enough of this. And the Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavaliers are sniffing around. They are looking to add Anthony to their stocks. So the Rockets, you know, Melo, CP3, and James Harden would be a great trio there. You know, look out for that one there. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, obviously teaming up with LeBron James there in Cleveland. That would be formidable as well to have Melo, LBJ, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. Keep your eyes peeled on this one here. Carmelo Anthony, be very surprised if he is in our New York Knicks jersey next season. So look for him to bounce to one of those two teams there. They'll be looking to do a deal there, without a doubt, to get him out of town. And the New York Knicks and the Chicago Bulls, two big market franchises that are really putting their hand up for the prize of the worst run or the most diabolical organization in the NBA. So well done to those two teams there, without a doubt. But Melo, look for him to move on to either the Rockets or the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'd like to see him join the Rockets. I like that fit, that with CP3 and James Harden there. Melo to have another scorer on the perimeter where, you know, he can give you 20 to 25 on any night. I think that catapults those guys into a 60-plus win team, and that definitely puts them in the conversation to challenge the Golden State Warriors. Now, they need a few more pieces, don't get me wrong, but Harden, Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony are three of the best going around, and that definitely adds to their team. Yeah, the Rockets, huh? They're really making a run. They're really making a run at this thing. If they can add Melo, that's a that's a big piece. He's dynamite on the offensive end. And last but not least, on the hoops, on the NBA, just wanted to mention. You have a look at all these escalating salaries that are taking place. There is a salary cap, as we know, but. You know, the amount of money that some of these owners are up for with the tax bills, just because teams are forced to outlay more money just to compete. I mean, the Golden State Warriors have taken this thing to a whole new level. Yeah, and they got Steph Curry cheap on his first contract after he got it, he was drafted into the league, but now he's obviously signed the richest contract in NBA history, a $200 million contract. They have Kevin Durant there as well to re-sign. Iguodala has just signed for another 3 years, which takes them well and truly over the salary cap. So they're up for huge amounts of money on the tax bill. But some of these other teams, even teams that really are mediocre. And when I say mediocre, I just say run of the mill. Obviously, not elite with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors and teams of that magnitude. But you know, teams such as the Toronto Raptors, that you know, first and second round teams in the playoffs, whether they're in the East or the West, that are being forced to you know, just load up with the salaries, and the tax bills are mounting and mounting. Some really crazy numbers that are going on, and I just think that's interesting in regards to that, to where the league is. I remember you know, not long ago, if teams were going over the salary cap and they were being taxed taxed over that, it was looked as a major liability. Owners were very reluctant to do that, but now, with these massive contracts, with a new collective bargaining agreement, you take a look at some of these numbers and teams are just blowing out the salary cap, and the tax bills are mounting and they're mounting, and some of these owners clearly are not as reluctant to pay the tax bill. So there's some major commerce going on in the NBA right now. Major business. The league is exploding, and salaries will continue to skyrocket, and the salary cap will continue to be broken. As long as there's clubs looking to you know, trade for and sign the best free agents on the planet, whether they sign three or they sign four, they're willing to blow out the salary cap just because that is the formula to be successful in the league these days. You're listening to No Holds Barred. You know, I just love this NBA stuff. They do such a good job. I mean, the season's been over for, you know, over a month now, and with the NBA draft and free agency, it's just going berserk over there. It's fantastic. But in saying that, I just want to segue into some boxing. I want to talk about what I saw yesterday and what went down there at Suncorp Stadium in Brisbane. What a spectacle yesterday. Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn pummeled each other for 12 rounds there in a what can only be described as a controversial fight. Great to see Horn really really step up to the plate there and give Manny all he could handle. 50,000 people packed in there to Suncorp Stadium. It was an unbelievable spectacle to, you know, have the open stadium there. Really looked like a bit of a throwback to some of the classic boxing championship fights over the years. I think they should do more of that. I thought it was great, you know, watching it on TV, let alone actually being there. And we all know about Manny Pacquiao. This guy is one of the all-time greats, if not the best that we've just about ever seen. And I do not say that lightly. People may go, oh, well, you know, based on what? Well, based on the fact that he's an 11-time world champion. He's not just a world champion. He's an 11-time world champion in 8 different weight classes. And if you have any respect for the fight game, you would know how special and how great that truly is. 8 different weight classes is truly phenomenal. It's tough to be a world champion in one weight class, let alone 8. So, you know, Manny Pacquiao deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest boxers of all time. But yesterday, what went down, it was really an incredible spectacle. And Manny Pacquiao in the 9th round really took to Horn, and looked like Horn was going to get knocked out. He was in real trouble there. The referee coming over at the end of the 9th and basically saying, look, I'm going to stop it. And Horn pleading to continue, don't stop it, I'm going to be okay. And the referee basically stating, you need to show something here, otherwise it's curtains. And Horn somehow was able to hold on, and not only hold on, but he got the decision as well. And look, a controversial decision, a unanimous decision over Manny Pacquiao, that definitely wasn't the fight that I saw. If anything, you know, give it a split decision, but I think the judges got this one very, very wrong, you know, because there's no way that that was a unanimous fight. Now, it looks real bad now around the globe because, you know, the hometown fighter got the hometown decision. But when it's all said and done, boxing cannot hide away from the controversial decisions and judging and so forth that goes on with these title fights. They're renowned for that, and I think that's one of the major reasons why they're slipping behind in the fight game when it comes to the attention graph with the mixed martial arts with the MMA. You know, there's no such controversy that goes on there. It's pretty cut and dry. But you know, disappointing to with the backlash that's going on now for Horn, the greatest moment of his life up until now, and he's forced to deal with this speculation. And look, the eye test says that it was a split decision fight. I thought Manny probably won the fight based on that 9th round. You know, the numbers stack up for the Pac-Man. You know, he landed 182 punches to Horn's 92 at a 32% clip, where Horn had a 15% clip. And you know, the eye test says that Horn, he basically looked like Rocky Balboa when Creed beat him to an absolute pulp in the first installment of the Rocky series. So, you know, based on that, I don't know how that could be a unanimous decision. That's totally off the charts there with that decision. But the history books say we've got a new world champion. The great thing is these two look like they're going to tangle again, possibly in Melbourne at Etihad Stadium. They had a rematch clause in the contract, which is great. I think Manny may have slightly just underestimated Horn's toughness, came in a little underdone. I don't think that will happen next time they fight later on in the year. So even though Pacquiao, I think, came in maybe a little bit underdone, I still think he was probably the better man on the day. You know, you can't avoid those numbers there, those facts with those percentages. Yeah, full credit to Horn, though. He just come in, he barraged in with a bit of a street fighter mentality, you know, throwing some headbutts in there. He made it, really made the fight a little bit dirtier than what you know, than what Pacquiao would have liked. But hey, you know, the tactics come into it, and he's just going to fight his style of fight. But hey, I'm looking forward to that rematch later on in the year, possibly at Etihad Stadium down there in Melbourne, probably a late November, early December fight. And in fact, I could possibly see myself down there checking that out live. I think that one is not to be missed, to see the great Manny Pacquiao go at it live is something that would be great to see. One of the greatest athletes that we've definitely seen for this generation and in this lifetime. So I think Pacquiao and Horn Super Fight 2 could be a beauty. Hey, they could go three times. I think if Pacquiao gets the next one, hey, why not do a trilogy? That would be something else to see. This is No Holds Barred. Yeah, it was a good fight yesterday, huh? Those guys were going at it. That was a throwback. That was like an old school fight. That did look like something out of the Rocky movies. I can't wait for the second one. But let's get on to some tennis. We need to talk about Wimbledon. This show is getting away from us here. Wimbledon Championships starting tonight from the All England Club. It's going to be 2 weeks of amazing tennis. We need to get in there and talk about some matchups. And who are the favourites, who are not the favourites, how the Australian boys are looking, and girls for that matter. Yes, starting tonight, and I think the favourite for the 2 weeks at this stage is the great Roger Federer. He's been in phenomenal form throughout this year. He's been very picky with his schedule, did not play the French Open, the clay court events there. Based around the fact he wanted to be ready to go here at Wimbledon. And I think he deserves firm favouritism because the elite players and the superstars on the men's side are falling apart around him. Andy Murray has had a terrible season for his standards, and obviously the current world number one. I think he's battling some serious niggling injuries. Novak Djokovic is not the player that he used to be. He's battling some off-court issues as well. He's not as mentally as strong, or he doesn't have the will or the desire, it seems to be, at this stage. So he's not the same player as he used to be. And then you have the only one who's really clipping it at Roger's heels this year is Rafa Nadal. Winning a 10th French Open there a couple of weeks ago, absolutely phenomenal. Like 10 French Opens, I mean, there's just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous numbers from the Spanish bull. But Wimbledon, you've got to give the advantage to Roger. The slick grass, but wouldn't be great to see a Federer versus Nadal final there at the All England Club. So action is starting tonight. Some of these first round matchups, Novak is playing Martin Kleisen from Slovakia, and it's not going to have it all his own way. Kleisen is a dangerous player, a lefty out of Slovakia, has won over 10 titles on the ATP Tour, no mean feat. So don't expect Novak to have that all his own way. Federer has got the toughest matchup out of the big guns. He's playing Dolgopolov, a tricky customer, has been top 15 before in the world. I think Dolgopolov will come out trying to swat everything, hit winners. He plays an entertaining brand of tennis, but of course you'd expect Roger to move on through there. Nadal is playing Australian John Millman from Brisbane. Good to see Johnny Millman back on deck. He's battled some serious injuries over the last 12 to 18 months. Has a pretty unforgiving style, Johnny, but he's all heart. And, to have him up against Nadal first round, he's going to give Nadal everything he possibly can, but obviously expect Nadal to get through that one there. With the Australian boys, Nick Kyrgios in action tonight. He plays the Frenchman Herbert. He's a former number one doubles player in the world. He's just started to get his singles ranking up over the last couple of seasons. He's a tricky customer, but Kyrgios, you would hope, has too much firepower there for the tricky Frenchman. We've got Bernie Tomic playing Misha Zverev, the tricky lefty, 29 in the world. He's a grass court player. His style, he likes to serve and volley, likes to come to the net. And we all know what Zverev did to Andy Murray at the Australian Open earlier on this year. So a tough one there for Tomic, but I think that one could go either way. But he really needs to get back on track, Tomic. Really needs an attitude adjustment. And, you know, to play tennis at the highest level and to compete, he needs to compete a lot harder if he's to fulfill his potential. He's a long way from that. And the youngster from South Australia, Tanasi Kokkinakis, he's got a shot. He's got a tough one. He plays the Argentinian Del Potro in round one. Good to see Tanasi back on tour, getting a couple of quality wins, and it's just about it whether or not he can string some major victories together at the highest level without his body breaking down. He's 6'5", he's a superb athlete, but he's just one of those athletes that something seems to be wrong all the time. It's very, very, very unfortunate for Tanasi. He's a lovely fellow, and we wish him all the best against Del Potro. I hope Tanasi can string some victories together, or just string some matches and see out the year consistently without breaking down. That'd be great if he could get 6 months worth of quality tennis on tour in. But geez, Del Potro, huge match up there. Delpo, I mean, good grief. If you ever get courtside with Delpo, I mean, that's one guy who hits at maximum velocity. I mean, that thing has got some serious heat on it. So that's a tough one. Tough one there for Tanasi. But the next one I want to talk about briefly, Grigor Dimitrov is up against the Argentinian clay courter Diego Schwartzman. Schwartzman, a diminutive Argentinian, about 5'6". There's not much of him. As I said, does his best work on clay. You'd expect Dimitrov to get through. Fans out there probably remember Dimitrov from, the Australian Open this year. He was electric. Blazed his way through to the semi-finals, playing sublime tennis, really maximising his potential, which is something that I believe he's failed to do up until this point in time in his career. It's a real shame that, but he looked like he was really on track, gave Nadal absolute fits, all he could handle in that semi-final, and that was great. He was the hottest player for the first couple of months of the year, Dimitrov, but he's just cooled off slightly since then, has been unable to maintain that level, and he's probably looking for a good showing here at Wimbledon to get his season back on track, to get back in the top 10 where he belongs. It's the consistency that has been Dimitrov's downfall over the years. But he needs a good event here, a good tournament here, and what better way to get back on track than a fourth round or a quarterfinal showing at Wimbledon. And I'd like to see him do that so fans can actually see his athletic talent and ability on a global level. He comes from great stock, Dimitrov. I think both his parents were both Olympians for Bulgaria. I believe his father was an Olympian wrestler and his mother a track athlete. Something along those lines anyway. So it comes from tremendous stock. I mean, both parents are Olympians. So it's no surprise when you see the Bulgarian player get around the court when he's in full flight. He is great to watch. So hopefully a good event for Dimitrov starting tonight against Schwartzman. And last but not least, a matchup tonight that really has got sentimental value for myself. Andy Murray, world number one, is first up on center court, and he's taking on the Kazakhstan crusher, young Alexander Sasha Bublik. Now, the backstory to this is I was flown over to Delray Beach, Florida, in December of last year to be one of the coaches for the Kazakhstan Davis Cup team. Over there, I said in Delray Beach for a four-week training camp in preparation for the ATP Tour season for this season, and Alexander Bublik was in that squad. He was around about 210 in the world at that time, 19 years of age, and I spent a month with Alex and the national team there, training and coaching in preparation for this season. From there, down to Melbourne for the Australian Open, and big Alex was in qualifying and won three matches in qualifying, and then upset Lucas Pouille, that 15th ranked player in the world at the time, Lucas Pouille, the Frenchman, in the first round in four sets to make the second round. So it was a huge result for Alex. He's sitting around about 130 in the world right now. He was lost in the last round of qualifying there at Wimbledon. to Daniel Brands, the big German, 12-10 in the fifth set. Alex was organising a trip to Italy to play another tournament, and he got the call up from the tournament, basically saying, "Hold your horses, there, young fella. There's been an injury. You're a lucky loser." And his name was drawn out of a hat to go into the draw. Not only did it go into the draw, but his first up opponent is Andy Murray, starting on center court tonight. So it's definitely a popcorn match, let me tell you. To help Alex out at the Davis Cup training camp, and then down at Melbourne during the Australian Open, to get to know him quite a bit. He's a real competitor. He's got a bit of crazy about him, that's for sure. And he's a real entertainer. He's got a two-hand backhand. He's about 6'5", huge serve, huge forehand. Grass is going to suit his game. So tonight is high-octane entertainment. You need to check it out, Murray versus Bublik. It should be a real beauty. Really, really, really looking forward to that one. It should be a ripper. I don't want to talk about. Alex has got a bit of crazy about him. Quick story. Australian Open qualifying. I think he played the Belgium Ruben Bemelmans second round. I was there courtside, and Alex just couldn't get into the match. Was super tight. Was down a set and 3-love, and basically his bags were packed to head out of Melbourne. And he snapped a racket. He looked over at courtside, snapped a racket over his leg like it was a twig. This thing basically disintegrated like a toothpick. Really Murat Safin style, made a real mess of it. And from there, it totally freed him up. And from there, he just swatted forehand winners and served aces and bombs, unplayable serves, for the rest of the match, and won in three sets, and basically tore Bemelmans to shreds. Then qualified, won round three, and then beat Pui, the 15th-ranked player in the world, destroyed him in four quick sets. Yeah, huge game. Very, very big talent. Really looking forward to that one tonight. Hopefully he can make a really good account of himself against the world number one. So, looking forward to it. So, what a show. Told you it was going to be a cracker. So much going on. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a ripper. We'll be back tomorrow. More Wimbledon tennis. More NBA free agency. This is No Holds Barred. See you tomorrow.